This is the Tater Report. It is CIUT 89.5 FM. And as I mentioned, in a halfway point, we're going to be talking to Tony Lea. And of course, we have this issue of the tariffs. And then there was a little joke that our premier played called the surcharge. And the issue for our listeners, and any Canadian or American for that matter, needs to pay attention to, is how poorly we are served by what is called the media. We have found ourselves in a laughable, tragic kind of laughter situation, where the Premier of Ontario announced that he was going to answer the tariff on steel and aluminum of 25% tariff by Donald Trump with a similar tariff here, or that is to say a surcharge on services of electricity to a couple of three American states. And it blew up in his face, actually, because within hours, the President of the United States said, well, I'm going to double our tariffs since this fellow, whoever he is, did that. And within 24 hours, Captain Canada, as he wants to be called, maybe he's Lieutenant or Private Canada. Private's a good word. He folded, and Canadian media beat itself to death trying to rationalize what happened next. He said, well, we achieved something. We've got a meeting with the Commerce Secretary, Mr. Lutnick, and I'm going down there and we're going to tone it down. Okay, well, look, it's been a week and it ain't been toned down. I don't know if he's got a hearing aid or what he might require. Donald Trump has not been toned down. So you say you accomplished something, you didn't accomplish nothing. But you did embarrass everybody because the Commerce Secretary of the United States said there's this guy who said, I think he says he's the premier, he's like a governor, and he put a surcharge on us. This is like, I'm repeating something I said last week, but let's focus on this. He said, so at any rate, he's back down. Now there will be a meeting. The meeting lasted 90 minutes, and the media here said it was Premier Ford's meeting. That is, he initiated, he asked for the meeting, and the Commerce Secretary, that's the American government, that is not a state of the United States, it is the American government, Commerce Secretary, played Canada. He said, sure, Doug, you want to come down? I'll give you 90 minutes. He gave him 90 minutes. And everybody in Canada, actually, if you don't read the newspapers, you're way ahead of the game, because you would say, well, why is a premier going to talk to an American government official when he doesn't represent Canada? He's the premier of Ontario. And why would the Commerce Secretary say yes? Because he couldn't resist playing Canada. He said he could say to the prime minister or the federal government of Canada, hey, guess who's down, wants to come see me? So I'm going to talk to him. That's what happened. That was embarrassing because, of course, the reporting didn't make it that way. Rosemary Barton of the CBC said, oh, he got a meeting. Yeah, he got a meeting, an embarrassing one. And they had to scramble to cover this. What they did was two federal ministers went along with him, and that was an after-the-fact decision of some type. I'll bet it'll take about 5 or 10 years for some reporter to put the pieces together to tell us how this happened, but it was a completely ignorant and embarrassing show. And I was reading the New York Times account. And, you know, it's kind of an important paper in the U.S. And they turned it around. They said, here, an American newspaper, somewhat as almost important as the Toronto Sun. The New York Times said Premier Ford accompanied two federal ministers because they understand the protocol. If you're in a tariff a trade war with somebody and you're meeting, you can't have premiers initiating or running the meetings. That's absurd. It's a joke. So they said, the New York Times said, well, you know, he accompanied them. But if you read the Toronto media, Canadian media, Anglo media, I guess the Quebecers, actually Quebec began to say, hey, wait a minute, we have a lot of aluminum and steel. How come we weren't there? And nobody knows the answer to that, by the way. And there's no reporters going to help you. Eve Engler will probably help you. We have some people who actually have their brains working and do write articles. But really, all everybody tried to do was, if you pardon the expression, cover their ass as to what had actually taken place. And that was an embarrassing moment from which I don't think we've entirely recovered. Now, the other thing that they haven't told us in the media here is two things. They didn't tell us what happened to the next meeting, because Doug came out. We watched him. The press had a stakeout at the front door at the American Commerce Department, and they all waited and waited, and they interviewed each other about waiting, and then I saw pictures at the door. At any rate, eventually the premier came out, thrilled to death that he'd actually met the commerce secretary and had a good lecture and felt good about it, thought it was great. He explained what he thought had happened. He said it was wonderful, it was good, we made a lot of progress. And, he said, we're going to meet again next week. Okay. Hello, Canada. It's been a week. Was there a meeting? All you journalists were standing in front of the building at the door with your microphones. Where's the meeting number two? It hasn't happened. Or if it did happen, you're keeping it a secret. There hasn't been a meeting. He said, we're going to meet next week. A week has gone by, and there hasn't been a meeting. Here's another piece missing. And every Canadian should be banging the table about this, because we're going to need a media that doesn't just turn itself into mushrooms, I guess. We need to know, what did the Commerce Secretary say? Did anybody interview? Could they get an interview? Can any Canadian journalist get an interview with Howard Lutnick, who gave, according to the Ontario representative, a master class in business and trade? He gave us a master class. Aren't we lucky? He didn't do anything about the tariff, but golly, he gave us a master class. Well, okay, Canadian journalists, CBC, or any of you other jokers who are kidding, pulling you with my leg. Did any of you ask Howard Lutnick how it went? Or does he pick up the phone when you call him? My guess is he doesn't give a damn what you think. And he isn't going to give you 5 seconds. Doug got 90 minutes. But this is ridiculous. And the ridiculousness of this situation is piling up. Now we have, I read, the Alberta's premier, according to the Globe and Mail, when the new prime minister, and of course now there's going to be an election, so we'll find out if he remains prime minister, but she met with Mr. Carney after he did a skate around with the Edmonton hockey team. I don't know their names. Oh, the Oilers. At any rate, he did a skate around with them, and then he met Premier Smith. Miss Smith, as you remember, went to Washington. So she gave him a list of demands to avoid a national unity crisis. And if the new prime minister or the whoever will be elected doesn't meet the demands, we're told, she says, we will have a unity crisis. I'd say you already have one, because most Canadians think that the oil in Alberta belongs to Canada, not to some company and some premier. So, and she wants a pipeline, and she says it's got to go the way I want it to go, or otherwise you're going to have a problem. Well, they've already got a problem, because many don't want that pipeline, but especially Quebec has said, no, it's not coming. No, it's not going to come here. So at a time when we're told we have a Team Canada, a bunch of the players are not showing up for practice. And a matter of fact, they don't even know what the game is, because they actually think that they can wander off and make arrangements on their own. And if that's true, you don't have a unity crisis, you have an identity crisis. You're not a country, if that's how it functions. And so here's somebody threatening the unity of the country if they don't get their way. Since the Americans have discovered how easy it is to play this game with the Canadians, if Ms. Smith says, oh, you're treating me badly, Donald Trump will say, hey, look at this. Here we are offering to take them over and help them out and let them become Americans, et cetera. Let them become, et cetera. And they're mistreating this province, which he will say is like a state, and she's like a governor, and she's being mistreated. Alberta's not going to be able to lay a pipeline. So I'm going to do her a favor, Canada. I will step in and help her out and see how you like those apples. That's how dangerous this thing is. And nobody seems to, well, let's put it this way. That's like, it's the old problem of the iceberg floating toward us. That someone at a time like this would raise the issue, if I don't get my pipeline, you have a national unity crisis. If you probably heard me say the name Quebec. Quebec is a bit of an iceberg on the horizon too, because it was, of course, founded and has been occupied by a French population since the beginnings of the European presence in North America. And it has a clear and distinct identity. And the Parliament of Canada voted unanimously on one of those take note resolutions, where they voted that Quebec is a nation. So if you say, well, Quebec, you're going to have to put through that pipeline, then you also have a unity crisis. And do not think for a moment that the Americans aren't watching like a hungry wolf this little problem. And bless the heart of the poor little prime minister who's going to inherit this thing, because people have been shooting their mouths off, and the opponent is saying, I'm not sure you have a country. That's where people have to think hard. And by the way, they also have to treat each other with respect and have some serious meetings and actually, you know, stop putting on toques and funny jerseys, but actually sort out what it is that will make us into one five-fingered fist, as they say, so that we can actually do what is necessary to survive and prevail in a trade war that was not initiated by Canada. It was initiated by the government of the United States. And by the way, Donald Trump is a unique figure in history, but do not forget that he was elected president of the United States, and he swamped or beat up the Democrats real bad. They didn't have an answer for him. And I don't see the Democrats knocking themselves out on the Canada question. Frankly, nobody knows what they think. You have to ask Chuck Schumer, and he's a leading Democrat voice, except nobody talks to Chuck Schumer. Chuck Schumer just recently told his party he wasn't going to go against Trump on the budget, not on the budget, pardon me, on their debt, the living debt crisis. America owes, is in debt trillions, and Donald says he's going to fix that. This is all very, in my mind, very serious business. What I'm saying is we need a media. We don't have one. This is a joke. They have to start saying, well, what happened to the meeting, Doug? Say that. Say, can we get an interview with Howard Lutnick? Because it's claimed that there was progress. Could we put a microphone in front of him and ask him, are we making progress? And the answer I'm going to tell you, I happen to know, is no. But you go ahead and find out. But at the moment, there's no media asking the question. They're all satisfied to, you know, it's like the kid who comes home and said he won a fight. Oh, boy, did I beat that guy up. And you say, can we ask the other guy? Oh, well, he's not here, so we'll take your version of it. You did great. Terrific. Nice going, champ. This is Tater Report, CIUT 9.5 FM. I want to ask Pedro, do we have Canada, USA? Here's an apropos song. We played it last week. We probably ought to play it a lot. It's by the Travelers. And guess what? This song was written and performed almost a half century ago. Have a listen.
Oh, we share a common border with the country that you know. Just take a look at your atlas, it's the one that's down below. There's 50 states in the Union, and something should be done to forget the War of 1812 and make it 51. There'll be color television, social security, racial segregation, and the Birch Society. You can take the Fifth Amendment, you can vote for LBJ. You can even burn your draft card when we're Canada, USA.
Now some folks think we're English, which isn't true at all.
And some think we're a colony that's run by Charles de Gaulle.
But we're looking up to greater things upon that glorious day, when the capital of our little state is Ottawa, CA.
There's a bunch of stripes and 50 stars upon the Yankee flag.
There's gonna have to be 51 when Canada's in the bag.
But when we see the flag unfurled, we'll know we won the fight.
We'll be just before Connecticut in the third row from the right. There'll be color television, social security, racial segregation, and the Birch Society. You can cheer for Jimmy Hoffa, you can join the clan today. You can even be a Nazi when we're Canada, USA.
We'll all be very affluent in the great society. The buck is worth a dollar ten in Canadian currency.
The economy's sure to take a boost, it's very evident
that it costs us more to feed a queen than pay a president. There'll be color television, social security, racial segregation, and the Birch Society. You can take the Fifth Amendment, you can vote for LBJ. You can even burn your draft card when we're Canada, USA.
There'll be no more selling prairie wheat to all the commie crew.
There'll be no more Cuban sugar, that's very naughty too.
But think of all the benefits that surely have to come
when we're citizens of a country that's got the atom bomb. There'll be color television, social security, racial segregation, and the Birch Society. You can cheer for Jimmy Hoffa, you can join the Klan today.
You can even be a Nazi
when we're Canada, USA.
And, yeah, that was the Travelers, Canada, USA. Kind of, let's put it this way, it's been on the subconscious, the unconscious of the population of Canada, I think, ever since we evolved into the neighbor to the north of what became an empire. And it can be a good existence, but it can be very dangerous. Two very quick points before we talk to Tony Leah. I want to make sure we say that apropos of the tariff business and saving taxpayers' money, which everybody loves to talk about doing. Eve Engler has a nice article. You can find it, just say Eve Engler. But certainly something I agree with and I think should be pointed out is that it's very curious that at a time when the President of the United States is talking about annexing Canada and talking about forcing developments to get in either on the economy or statehood, Canada has provided a warship to sail through the Taiwan Straits between the Chinese island of Taiwan and the mainland of China, which Canada and the United Nations says is China. So we're engaging in provocative military behavior, and it costs a lot of money to run a ship. It may not be much of a ship, but it costs a lot of money. And we do that despite the fact that the boss of the Asia-Pacific strategy against China is the United States. That's just the reality. And if we want to get Mr. Trump's attention, and also if you want to be rational about the survival of Canada, their notice should go, well, simply by action first and then words. That is, we're not going to be doing that anymore because it is provocative. It causes both sides to be wasting money on armaments. And it is flies in the face of our own government's position, which is that Taiwan belongs to China. And there is no business for warships from Western powers to be sailing off their coast in a manner to make them uneasy, since after all, they spent 100 years under the boot of the British, the French, and the Americans, and the Germans, as a matter of fact, 100 years. And when they were driven into poverty, now they've come back and they are a healthy state and they're ready to do business. So let us trade with them. We have a 100% tariff on Chinese electric vehicles. And we complain about people putting tariffs on us, 100% on their vehicles. One other point. Former president of Philippines, Duterte, has been arrested and by the so-called ICC, which is just a broken robot still going through the motions. The great powers do not belong to the International Criminal Court. So equality before the law should dictate that nobody should go in front of that court. If the Americans and the Chinese and the Russians say, well, we're not going, we're not even recognizing you. But if you want to have fun and arrest the president, former president of the Philippines, by the way, he wasn't defeated in election. He stepped down after being two terms popular president. He was kidnapped. I'll just tell you one simple thing. He didn't go. He was a citizen of the Philippines. He was apprehended at an airport in the Philippines with the Philippine authorities. This would be President Marcos, who hates President Duterte. They apprehended him and they removed him from the country. And he's now in The Hague. And he never went in front of a Philippine judge. So the Philippines has surrendered its sovereignty and its self-respect as a country because its parliament voted not to be a member of the ICC. And yet here everybody's doing this little light applause because we're a bunch of colonialists and we think it's funny that Europeans exercise that kind of power over a large country, huge population, is supposed to be independent, and they do as they're told and pick up Duterte. If you have a government that is a democracy, if you have a judiciary, if you have an attorney general, then you are, and you're a sovereign country, they are competent to judge whether or not their former president committed a crime in their country. But because Marcos and Trump and others want to get rid of Duterte, they treat him like he's a Kleenex to be disposed of, just thrown away. And here everyone applauds because they all read the stories. Oh, he was bad. He did this. I wouldn't know, but I do know that it is the responsibility of the people of the Philippines to determine that. They're supposed to put, if you have any rights in your system, you're brought in front of a magistrate, and that foreign court comes to the magistrate and says, we want this man for the following reasons. And he, the accused, is permitted to be present and to make answer and to have counsel. He didn't get any of that. So we are super colonialists, still drunk with power, laughing at the removal of a popular former president of a country whose party is about to be engaged in elections in a few months. And everyone thinks that's funny, or that's fine, that's okay, we can do that. Well, don't ask for mercy when they grab you. Don't bother, because you don't deserve it. You thought it was just a joke to play on the Philippine people. This is the kind of ignorance is going to destroy the place.